Tuesday the 17th of February, Kof Gimel Shvat, Rabbi Rafi Garson, Redeeming the Jewish, Too High a Price, Redeeming the Jewish Captive and Negotiating with Terrorists.
Okay, good morning everyone. I'm very grateful to Torah Awake for inviting me to come back to speak to you. I'm also very grateful for giving me the opportunity to actually research this topic, which is of extreme importance, extremely topical. There has been in the news recently, Gilad Shalit, his release apparently is imminent. At what price? We usually start with a joke, but I don't know if we have time today, so if we have time, we'll do it at the end. Okay. Okay, there's a lot to get through. We have to compress a huge topic, which is really pages and pages of halachic literature and various makoros and makoron sources. Let's just start from the very beginning. A few price tags that have pulled off the internet of those brothers who fight for our country and land. In March 14th, 1979, the IDF reserve, that's the first spelling mistake of the day, Abraham, fell during Operation Litani, was released 76 terrorists, or 76 per soldier, November 24th, 83. 6 Nachal Brigade soldiers in PLO custody in Lebanon on 14th month, released in exchange for 98 security prisoners and 4,700 prisoners from the Afna prison, 800 terrorists per soldier. In 1984, Syria returned 3 soldiers, the bodies of 5 soldiers, which gave them 291 soldiers, 13 civilians, and 74 Syrians. Now, this next one was a particularly contentious issue, which we'll come back to at the end of this year, particularly with contemporary Poskim. On the 20th of May, 1985, the famous Jibril deal, where 1,150 terrorists were released for the return of the soldiers, Chazi Shanim, Yosef Gruf, and Nissim Salem, held by the Ahmed Jibril organization, price tag of 383 Israeli soldiers per soldier, or 380 terrorist soldiers per soldier. This deal is still considered extremely controversial, since while Israel retrieved its missing soldiers, among the prisoners released were the future leaders of the Intifada, including Yimach Shemo Ahmed Yassin of Hamas, who is still around today. September 12, 1991, Israel obtained the body of the Jewish soldier Samir Assad, abducted in 83, exchanged for 2 Democratic Front activists. 11th of November 91, Israel returns 9 bodies to Lebanon and releases 51 prisoners in exchange for credible information, etc., etc., etc. And more recently, 2004, 400 prisoners and 36 Lebanese and Arabs held towards obtaining release of Ron Arad in exchange for freeing businessman Elchanan Tannenbaum and the bodies of Benny Avraham, kidnapped 4 years earlier, and of course the tragic exchange of those 2 soldiers whose bodies were exchanged for I don't recall the amount, but it's a civilian, a large number of prisoners. Just as a caveat to this, there's an interview that was recently given by Professor Shalom Rosenberg from Hebrew U in Yerushalayim, and he was asked in that interview about the proportionality, this massive issue that's going on about in the press, whereby only a few Israelis were killed and hundreds of Gazans that were killed, and he arrived with, I think, with a brilliant Gemara cop. He said that Hamas itself set this proportion. If Hamas demands to free 1,000 terrorists incarcerated in Israeli jails for one Israeli soldier, Gilad Shalit, then they themselves set the worth rate that the life of one Israeli equals 1,000 Gazans, and if so, this proportionality dictates that in order to defend one Israeli soldier, we, Israel, have to attack terrorists despite the risk of killing hundreds of citizens. Which has a little twist. I haven't seen this in the Times, but there you go. An interesting idea. Okay. Let's just see the starting point before we see the Gemara, what the Gemara actually says about this. Right? We have a Rambam and Shulchan Aruch, which we have to get through, just to see basically what they say about the mitzvah of Pidyon Shevuim in general terms, in generic terms, the mitzvah of releasing or redeeming the Jewish captives. So the Rambam on page 2 there, for those that have it at the top, in Hilchot Matnot in Perek Chet. The Rambam rules like this: Pidyon Shevuim Koidem LePanasat Aniyim LChasadam. The mitzvah of redeeming the Jewish captive takes precedence over feeding the poor and clothing the poor. V'elecha mitzvah gedoyla kebidyon shavuim. It is in fact the greatest of all mitzvahs. Sh'ashavui hareu bichlal haravim v'asamim v'asameim v'harumim v'oimim v'sakanat nefashot. Those that are captive are included in the category of those people that are starving and are thirsty and are naked and they are in critical danger. V'hama'alimina v'pidyonot. Person that turns his eye away from redeeming such a Jew, harez o'aver, when he stands after 120 at the pearly gates, he transgresses several prohibitions. Number one, Lo ta'amet el avichad, do not strengthen your heart against your fellow Jew. Lo tikpot el ha'ad, do not hold back your hand. Ve'al lo ta'amod adam re'echa, do not stand by where your brother's stood. Ve'lo al yedenu befarech ne'enecha. U'batel mitzvah patoch te'tachet yedecha la. He transgresses the positive commandment of opening up your hand towards your fellow Jew. U'mitzvah b'chai achicha imach, your brother should live with you. Ve'ahavta al re'echa kamocha, you should love your fellow man near yourself. And what Shlomo HaMelech says in Mishlei, ve'atzel lekuchim namabes. He's not flipping with his words, Rabban. There is in fact no greater mitzvah than redeeming the Jewish captive. He continues and he says, Anshei ha'ir shegavu ma'ot lebinyan bet ha'knesset, if you have a city that has gathered together funds to build a shul, uba lehen davar mitzvah, and another mitzvah comes away, motzi'in bo ha'mamot, you're allowed to use the money. Kanu avanim bekorod lo yimachrum ledavar mitzvah. But once they build the materials, you can't use the money for anything else, except, exception to the rule, is pidyon shebuim. Even though they've got all the materials ready to build the shul, mochrin hakol lepidyon shebuim bilvad. The only thing you can sell these things for is for the redemption of a Jewish captive. Once it's been built already, then you can't sell the shul. You have to collect the redemption price from the congregation. Shulchan Aruch ruled similarly. Rabbi Yosef Karo in Yoredea Siman Reish Nubet. Pidyon Shavuim Kodem LePanasat Anim VeChazan. I'm not going to translate for the rest of it. Similar. Ve'en Mitzvah Gedolah KePidyon Shavuim Hilkach etc. 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 This is exactly the same. Okay. Seif Bet is exactly the same. He quotes all the verses. The one transgresses if he does this. And then in Seif Gimel he says as follows, in bold print underlined. Bekol Rega Shemeacher Lifdot Hashavuim. Every second that a person delays redeeming a Jewish captive, in a situation where one could have done it earlier on, it's tantamount to murder, and one would transgress that one of the Ten Commandments of not, that thou shalt not kill. That is exactly what it is. Every moment you delay when you don't, when you have the opportunity and you don't. Okay. The starting point for the discussion as to whether or not the state of Israel is acting correctly or not is the Mishnah in Gittin. The Mishnah Gittin says like this, and podin et ha-shevuim yeter akedei demeim, daf mem hei, a person is not allowed to redeem a captive for more than their value, mipenei tikkun olam. Now, Sonsino there translates as to prevent abuses, right, in order for the world to exist and not go crazy. Ve'en mavrichen et ha-shevuim, we don't allow a captive, we don't help them escape, again, mipenei tikkun olam, to prevent abuses. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel omer mipenei takanat ha-shevuim, it's got nothing to do with preventive abuses, because if you allow one captive to escape, the remaining captives are going to be ill-treated, right? This is a very famous question that happened in the Holocaust. If one person would escape, they'd make an example of 10 and they'd shoot 10. Yeah, right? Yimach Shem and the Nazis is a big question that was asked back then. So that was Rav Shimon ben Gamliel's opinion, mipenei takanat ha-shevuim, but the people left behind, they're going to suffer. The Gemara asked a question, Ibailhu, at the bottom of page 2, Ibailhu. Hi, mipenei takanat ha'olam. There's a machloket here in the Gemara to what that means. What does it mean to prevent abuses? There's two ways of understanding this. Does it mean mishum duchta desiburhu? Does it mean that if you redeem a Jewish captive for more than their value, you're going to have to come onto the kehillah, you're going to have to come onto the congregation, as Rashi explains at the bottom, and therefore the kehillah themselves are going to become poverty stricken. You're going to extort from them a tremendous amount of financial ransom, and therefore they won't have any money left. Or maybe dima mishum de lo ligru velita tefei, as Rashi explains, you don't want to give the non-Jews an opportunity to come and re-kidnapped, right? If they know they can declare a certain amount of ransom, which is extremely high, and the Jews are going to pay that, it's going to happen again in the future. So what does it mean, takanat olam? So Gemara says, Tashema, bring your right. The Levi, bar Darga, parke levarte betrei talte dinozat. Levi, the son of Darga, redeemed his daughter for an exorbitant amount of money, 12,000 golden dinar. Amar Abaye, so Abaye turned to him and said, Uman leimana debaratan achamim. So you see, obviously, if a person is wealthy, he's able to do it. He doesn't have to come onto the congregation. So the reason, perhaps, one knows how to do this is because of duchta, because it's a bureau. You shouldn't come onto the congregation. But if the congregation are not going to be bothered, because you have the funds, you're a very wealthy man, then it's not a problem. The Gemara says, well, who said he followed the Rabbanon's wishes? Maybe he didn't follow the Rabbi's wishes. Maybe he didn't follow him, there's no right. Ve'en mavrichin et ha-shevuim mipnei tikkun olam. Rashbag omer mipnei takanat shevuim. Lemaisa, though you're not allowed to do it, what's the practical difference? Ikebenayo delei ke'el achad. The Gemara said, practical difference between these two opinions is where there is in fact only one captive. If there is only one captive, then Rashi Magmiel would agree that you are allowed to help them escape, because there's no other captives left behind, there's not going to be abuse. But according to Tana Kama, generally we don't help them escape. Okay. Now, the question now becomes, based on this Gemara, we'll see several factors. Number one, how does Shulchan Aruch and Rambam, based on this Gemara, rule? How do we evaluate the estimation of what a captive is worth? Does that change? In times of war, do situations change? And more practically, over the timeline of Jewish history, has this Mishnah actually been followed in practice or not? We'll bring several rabbis from Yamsha Shlomo and the Radbar towards Rav David and Zimmer from Egypt, that was not necessarily the case. The Rabbanon and Chazal came up with innovative ways to, so to speak, forget this Mishnah to a certain extent. Okay. So on page 3, on the top of the page, written there, and in the headline I have the Shulchan Aruch rules based on the Talmud, the Gemara relative commentary. So based on this Gemara and Gittin, the Shulchan Aruch says like this: and poidin at the shavuim yotam mikadei demeim. He rules like the Tanakhama, you're not allowed to redeem a Jewish captive for more than their value. Mifanei tikun olam, in order to prevent abuse. Sheloi yu ha'oivim mosrim atzmam alhem shotam. Because what's going to happen is that the terrorists or the kidnappers are going to then go ahead and kidnap again in the future. Aval adam yachol lizot et atzmo bechol mashir. A person is allowed to redeem if he himself has a tremendous amount of funds. He can redeem for whatever he wants. Vechen letamin hacham, his interesting idea. When it comes to great Rav, you have to redeem for whatever the value is. Even if he's not a great sage, Elashu Tamid Kharif is a very sharp student. The Efshar Shia Adam Gadol. It's possible that he will be a great man. Podim Oto Bedamim Merubim. You have to redeem him for a tremendous amount of money. Vim Ishto Keacher Dami Olo. If a man's wife is considered to be like someone else or not, we'll have to see later on. Obviously the question borders on when we say Ishto Kegufo, man is like his wife. There's a famous cliche that goes, when a man marries a woman, they become one. The question begins when they start to decide which one. Right? So this is the question that Shulchan Aruch had. Do we say that a wife is considered like her husband or not, and therefore he can redeem her for any value? We're going to see that shortly. The Shulchan Aruch and Ibn Ezer says like this. Here we have an interesting discussion between the Vilna Gaon and the Shach and the understanding of Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, En mechayvin tabali totet ishto. Assuming a person has a generally happy marriage and his wife becomes kidnapped, we do not force the husband to redeem his wife for more than her value. Ela kemoshi shavek shashio. Whatever the going rate is for a captive, it's only that and no more. The yeshomim, and some say this is the Torah and the Rosh, the name of the Ramah. No, the isho kegufo dami. A wife is like himself. The yachol ifdod bechol asher lo. He's able to redeem her for whatever he wants. On this, the Vilna Gaon says, Bir Hagro. Not only he is able to. The Vilna Gaon says, I rule like the Rosh and the Tur. One is obliged to redeem his wife for whatever value there is. The Shach, on the first Shulchan Aruch we quoted, writes, Mashma afilu kroibim men lifto biyotim kedei demav. The implication of the Shulchan Aruch is that even a relative, you don't redeem for more than their value because of tikkun olam, to prevent abuse. Vechem mashma min desayim, this is implicit in the words of the Shulchan Aruch himself, aval yachol lifdot et asmo, he himself can redeem. Mashma dafka atmo, he himself, aval abach patak derashai lifdot yoter mikdem hen, ben lebitoi v'kroiva v'chol adam, ben mochin. If he does redeem anyone else, you don't protest, says Abach. Kiven deleka dukta zivura, because you're not going to come onto the community, so there's no problem. V'kol shiken de en moichin kesheba lifdot et ishto. We definitely do not protest if he wants to redeem his wife more than her value. Ela den mechayven lifdot et ishto biyotem mikdem hen. But we don't say that he's obliged to do that. The interesting machloket over here between the Shach and the Vilna Gaon and the understanding of the Shulchan Aruch, where there is an obligation to redeem your wife more than her value, the Ramah says, the Shulchan Aruch says, well, you don't have to. The Vilna Gaon says, you definitely have to. The Shach says, if you want to, you can. So it depends on the marriage. Okay. Now, how do we actually estimate the value of a captive? So the Pitchei Shuvah on Shulchan Aruch rules like this. We have to move quickly. Says the Pitchei Shuvah, page 3, second source. I am b'shuas maram lublim shekatav the pirush kadein ma. What that means? You estimate the value of a captive. Haynu kefima sheshavel inkor b'shuk ke'evet. How much is the going rate in the slave market? Ve'af agav davar seinu lezeh en regilon inkor avadim b'shurachot b'shuk. Even though nowadays, right, we don't sell slaves in the market. Mikol makom says the pirush shuva. Me'achar shelom asinu b'davar shum afarinim shum gilu yidash shabizmanenu yishtane hadin. Since we do not find in any of the writings and the literature of the acharonim any difference of opinion that the din should have changed from the din of the Gemara, mistama gam bizmanenu tzrichim le'arich on he'arich damav kama hayashavel inkor b'shuk. We work out roughly how much this man would go, how much this woman would go in the marketplace as a slave. Shemochrin sham avadim, because they still sell slaves in countries like Eretz Yisrael and Arab lands, the Turgaman in Turkey, Ein Sham. And now he quotes the Radbaz, but we'll see that later on. Now, Pitzei Shuvah continues and says, well, what happens in a situation where there's danger to life? Well, the terrorists say quite clearly that if you don't redeem this child or this man or this woman, we will kill this person. Does the halacha change? So, Pitzei Shuvah writes as follows: Ayin be'eshel Avram b'shem shut nachalat Yeshua, de'mamakom di'ika le'mecha shekatala. In a situation where concerned that the terrorist or the kidnapper might kill the captive, podin, you have to redeem. Ba'ayim b'tshuvas yad Eliyahu siman gimel shelo katav kenan del afilu ba'ayim el ariga en podin yotem ekedemav. He says, no, it's still status quo. You do not redeem more than the value. The Tirutz comes to the Sefta, the Potos was there, and he dug in Lokai Alibadamis, which we'll see shortly. Tosus has a certain approach to this, which we'll see on the next page. The Ayin Besefer Beit Hei Yud, which I think is Bet Hillel, who was Rav Hillel Ashkenazi, who was the Rav of Prague, he writes in the name of the Maharshak, Shene'elami Mimenu Divrei Tosfot Begitin, that seemingly you've forgotten what Tosfot rules in Gittin, the Im Bikshu La'arog Podin, that if they're going to kill the captive, you have to redeem for any value. And then in brackets he says, well, sometimes it's better to be passive and not do it. And then the third paragraph, Ach betruvas kezneset yecheskel, hisiga lehem mishum, dehai tirutze desekanad defashol lo shayach enim tam amishum duchta sibura. This whole reason, that you have to redeem a captive for more than their value, if there's critical life involved, is only if you have to come onto the congregation. Aval tama deloy ligvu hasfar lefechef, if the reason is, we're concerned that the kidnappers are going to do it again, on the contrary. The im betekanad defashol podim, that if when the kidnappers know, when there's critical danger involved, Yirtu la roget shvim, kidei shivu yotam yikademehen. What they're going to do? They're going to say, "Well, we'll kill them," and therefore, in the future, when we redeem another captive, they'll pay even more in order that we should avoid killing them. Okay. All right. He goes on, which is an interesting discussion for yourself. I want to get to some other areas of discussion. Okay. Now, the Gemara in Gittin has the following story. Gittin Nun Chet Amud Aleph. Ma'aseh b'Rishua ben Chananya. There was a story of Rishua ben Chananya. Shehalach lekrach godol sheberomi. He visited a large city in Rome. Amru lo, and the rabbi said to him, Tignok echad yesh bebet asurim. There was a young child, somehow he was a Jew, who was in the prison. Yafeh naim, he's got beautiful eyes, it's of roi, because of sedot lo totalim, and he has braids on his hair. Interesting discussion in Marsha, why this is relevant. So halach ve'amad al petach bet asurim. So he went and he stood by the doorway of the jail. Amar, he called out, Mi natan lemeshisa Yaakov v'Yisrael lebezuzim. How come the Jewish lineage of Yaakov and Yisrael are so degraded? And now oto tinok, that child responded to him, Amar haloze zuchatanu lo. It's because we sinned to Hashem, ve'lo avu b'drachav haloch ve'lo shamu b'tratot. We didn't listen to his Torah, we didn't follow in his way. Amar, so Rav Yehoshua ben Hananiah said, Muftachani bo shemoreh Torah beYisrael. I guarantee that this man, or this child, will be a great man, a great leader, a great posek in the Jewish people. Ha'uvda, and then he made the shavua, he made an oath, She'eni zaz mikan, I'm not going to leave here, Ad she'evdenu b'chol mamon she'posekim. Whatever money they claim for this ransom, we have to give it. Alav Amru, and in reference to the story, it's related, Lo zad misham, that he didn't move from there, Ad she'padu b'mamon harbe. They redeemed for a tremendous amount of money. Ve'lo hayu yamim mu'atim, and it was shortly after that, several years later, Ad she'horeh hora b'Yisrael, right, his prophecy came true, Umani, who was this young child? None other than the famous Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. So Tosfot over there says, Kol mamon she'poskin alav, I've underlined this in bold, whenever there is life and danger, podin shavuim yoyter kadamim. He argues on the Mishnah earlier on in Gittin Memhei, and he says you can redeem a captive even for more when they're value, when we're concerned for life. Kedamrin ha'perek ha'sholeach gabi moich ha'atzmo v'edbanav lo v'edekhav min goshen ha'ach ha'dikata la'inami mishum dufna v'horam ha'chaya. Okay. Alternatively, another reason over here, which you saw earlier on, is that if there's a great rav, there's also an exception to the rule, you have to pay more than the value. The question now becomes, this is all very nice, but over the time, has actually this been followed in practice? So there's many, many sources, I've picked just two. Was the Mishnah in Gittin actually followed in practice? First is the Sefer Yamshar Shlomo in Gittin. So he writes as follows, V'ha'idna hanche goyim lechasadim be'eretz Turgma. Nowadays, the tremendous people from Turkey, v'asmuchim lahem, near them, poidim ashurim yoyteh v'yoyteh mikdemeh, they've redeemed Jewish captives even more than their value. And even though the community is going to become poverty stricken, the mevater, they oversee that. Hashem yosif al secharam, Hashem should give them reward. Upo latam nifnei Hashem tapu me'olam haba, they should get tremendous word in the world to come. Gam ba'olam hazeh, lo ad achshav nidmau yisrael begoyla, there's not that many Jews left over. V'yesh lachus al yetebra, one has to be concerned for the remnants of the Jewish people. Shelo tichve gachelet yisrael, the embers of the Jewish people should not be put out. He says, and in his time, there's tremendous suffering for the Jewish people. To make them convert and to embrace the cross. And to work on Shabbat unnecessarily. Gamim lo yivdu otam mikal mecha shelo alibam. And if they don't redeem them, then what's going to happen to them? Shelo yargu otam. They might kill them. When it comes to critical danger, we redeem even for more than their value. Alken nidavar libam begufam, etc. Vesimat v'siyata dishmayim, and he concludes that God should help them. So already in the Yom Shel Shomu's times, it wasn't followed. The Radvaz was asked a question when he was Rav of Egypt, Rav David ben Zimra. Sha'alti mimeni odiach adati, that I should give my opinion al ahad etanan, that we know in the Mishnah, whether we redeem a captive for more than their value or not, is that still the case? So he answers, teshuva. This is his response. Kivar na'agu kol Yisrael yiftot et Yisrim yoyt mikadem, and the custom has already become to redeem a Jewish captive for more than their value. Hanim kem b'shuk of the going market rate. Sha'arei zakeno katano en shaveh b'shuk yotem yasrim dinarim. If you redeem a slave, you buy a slave, be him young or old, in the marketplace, you only get 10 dinars for it. Nevertheless, poison of the bekaf, bekuf dinarim, right? They redeem 400, or yoter. The time at the minhago mission, the kamen on tamu, the deal maligur velaytiv in surat mal nishvot mehem. And that you may want to argue and say, well, how can you do that? That you're causing the kidnappers to have an incentive to kidnap again. There's a difference. Why? Nowadays, shashvai men yotim nachatir bisho Yisrael. Kidnappers do not come out directly against the Jews. Elachom mishim so, whoever they happen to find, they take. Therefore, even if you redeem them for more than their value in the marketplace, since you're not really redeeming them for more than the value of a regular non-Jew, mutar, it's okay. Leave the Jews doing what they do. They do tremendous acts of kindness. The hemshech of this is actually very, very interesting. If we have time, I'd like to come back to this. Okay, and he gives four reasons at the end to be done lechas sechut as to why this is the case. Number one, he says perhaps the even though sometimes it's for more than their value, but you know they'll choose whichever Jew. Sometimes you can have a very important non-Jew who be able to extort a tremendous amount of ransom from them. So they're not specifically going out for the Jew. Alternatively, here we're talking about specifically a Rav and various. He gives four reasons towards the end. Okay, now the very, very last seif at the end of Shulchan Aruch, the end of Chosh Mishpah. Haroet chaverot tove banar. Person who sees his friend who's drowning in the sea, or shalistim b'inav, or gandits are coming out against him, chayav le'asiro, he's obliged to save him, ben begufo, ben b'manoyo, with his body, with his money, umim yesh l'mamon, le'asiratmo, chayav le'shalem, he has to pay this. Now, the Rambam writes, haroet chaverot tove banar, shalistim b'inav, you see the same things happening, v'yachol asil, and you can save him, or sheyiskor achem lasiyo, you can redeem him. Other people can pay them to save him. Or sheshamash onzi machshim al avra, you hear that something bad's going to happen to your friend, and you don't tell him. In all these cases, right? Avar as lo tamor adam recha, you transgress the prohibition of standing by while your brother spilt. V'imatzino arekiru kiyam kolam. If you do save him, it's like you saved the entire world. The Bet Yosef over there says the Yushami matik that the Gemara and Yushami says afilu lachnis asmo besavik sakana chayef. Even to put yourself in a doubtful danger, you're obliged. V'niru sh'atam yipenei shehala badai usafek. V'chol makayim nefesh acham Yisrael, kiru kiyem olam male. The Yishami seems to be opinion that one is obligated to expose himself, written here, to possible danger in order to rescue another person from certain danger. So you could argue, if my thesis is correct over here, that freeing terrorists equates maybe to possible danger. Why? Because what happens? I mean, history has dictated over the last 60 years that very often those terrorists, stroke soldiers, stroke Palestinian militants that they release end up going back into their country and carrying out more terrorist attacks against the Jews. So that's something to bear in mind. Now, there's a very well-known story, the Yom Shel Shoma quotes from Rami Rotenberg. Rami Rotenberg from the 12th century was one of the greatest, earliest Jewish codifiers of Jewish law. And at the age of 70, he was taken captive and placed in the Einstein prison in France. And Emperor Rudolf I, for those who don't know the story, proceeded to demand an exorbitant amount of money for his release. Now, in order to understand the full significance of this act that he's about to do over here, it's important to realize that almost all the Rabbanim and all the leaders of the Jewish community in that generation were the Maharam students. All of them. Even the great rabbis of those generations that followed were greatly influenced by the teaching of the Rambam. They were all influenced by them. His most famous student was that of the Rosh, Rav Asher ben Yechiel, known as the Rosh, and Rav Yosef Karo Shulchan Aruch, he writes the rulings on that. So because the Maharam was such an important figure, the emperor, right, hoped to extort a tremendous amount of money from the Jewish community, and he almost succeeded. The Maharam's students and Maharas were prepared to raise the sums necessary to release. They felt that although the law prohibits redeeming a captive more than their value, as we've seen, right? But since he's the leading Torah scholar of the generation, we'll pay for him. But he succeeded in preventing a dam opening up, because the Maharam would not allow this to be paid. He understood that if this would happen, it would only encourage the enemies of the Jewish people to imprison other Rabbonim in the future. And as a result, he spent the final 7 years of his life in the Ein Sham prison, and it was there that he died. Let's see this inside. Yamshel Shlomo, Maharam Rotenberg, we've got 7 minutes left. Shemati Maharam Rotenberg Zichron Rebracha, from the last page over here. Shehayat Afut Bemigdol Egzim Kama Shanim, he was in this prison, Be'asar Tava Min Akilot Tzach Gadol, Ve'akilot HaYirotim Nifdol, the Kelo wants to redeem him, Ve'lo Iniach, he didn't let them. Ki Amar, because he said they're poisoned, Shurin, Yirotim Egzim, you don't redeem a captive more than their value. Ve'tamani, and I wonder, Me'acha Shehayat, he takes issue with the Maharam, says the Yamshel Shnoimer, Me'acha Shehayat, Tamid Acham Muflag, since he was such a great Rav, Ve'lo HaYakim Oto B'doro B'toret HaChasidu, there was no one like him in his generation. Ve'tareh Lifdono B'chol Mamon Shemalem, they should redeem him for any money, Be'shar? He didn't say that I'm such a great man. What about Bitul Torah? He himself writes in his final writings that he's writing this in darkness and depression, without light, without Torah. He lamented the fact that he had no books with him. Why was he not concerned for the mitzvah of Bitul Torah, or the sin of Bitul Torah? Since so many people needed him. Obviously, this was a tremendous reason, because he knew that if he would do this and allow himself to be redeemed for tremendous value, they would then go ahead and redeem take captives other Rabbonim. And that's why the Rosh at that time actually escaped and went to Tunisia, and then from there he ended up being in the Rav of Spain, which is why many Moroccan Jews actually don't eat rice on Pesach, because you have an Ashkenazi Rav who was the Rav in Spain, and hence the famous name Ben Arosh is the son of the Rosh, of the students of the Rosh. Okay. Now, that's just a nugget of information. Now, recent response about exchanging terrorists with Israeli soldiers. There's two main sources of that, this that I found. One is Rosh Shlomo Goren in Sefer Torat Medina, notwithstanding his very controversial outlooks in Hashkafot, and he wasn't necessarily accepted by most of the Gedolim, but he was the chief rabbi for a while. And also Rav Chaim David Halevi, Aselech Harav, who was the Sfarim Chief Rabbi of Tel Aviv. So I've written there the Sfarim if you want to look them up. So I've written right here, we're going to read this quickly in English. Rav Goren was against such exchanges. He writes that we must learn from the law of Mishnah in Gittin that we do not pay more than their value. And even though Tosfot in Gittin said that when there is danger to a captive, we may indeed pay more than the captive is worth. But the Rambam and the Rashba both disagree. It's the spelling mistake of Rambam. They disagree. And he adds that the safety of one or a few Jews in captivity does not take precedence over the safety of the entire public. And interestingly, I've written, he rules in according with the Radbaz, and not the Shulchan Aruch, that a person does not have to put himself in danger in order to save his fellow Jew from definite danger. And finally, in our case, freeing hundreds of thousands of terrorists definitely endangers the public, because they will all be able to free to attack Israel and take more hostages. Therefore, everything Israel did is against halacha, he writes, of the Mishnah and the legal authorities, and against the security of the Jewish people in Israel and the state of Israel and the diaspora. So he was vehemently against all these prisoners, saying he wrote this particularly about that 1985 famous Jibril deal. Rabbi Levi, David Halevi, who was the Sfardi Chief Rabbi of Tel Aviv, he writes in Aselech Harav in Chalek Zayin, he writes as follows, he admits that Rabbi Goren's ruling based on Gittin and all the ruling of leading authorities is Barur Benachon, he writes, is 100% correct and 100% clear. However, he argues, and he says all of the sources quoted deal that we've seen till now deal with robbers who kidnap people for money. But in Israel, we are dealing with a war based on Palestinian nationalism. And they will continue to kidnap Jews regardless of what we do, so the price that we pay for captives is not a factor and does not increase terrorists. Does not increase terror. Now, Professor David Golkin writes, based on his sefer, in our case, we need halakhic innovation, just as Yeshua innovated that one may pay excessive ransom for a sage, and just as Tosfot innovated that emissions does not apply after destruction. There are about two innovative and linear approaches, as we saw above. The government originally decided that if an Israeli soldier sees that the state will not redeem Israeli soldiers for a high price, they would prefer to retreat rather than to capture. This too can be considered a halakhic innovation. Therefore, he does not think that the state of Israel acted against Jewish law in exchanging 1,150 terrorists for three Israeli soldiers in 1985. There's a lot more to be said about this, particularly the law regarding prisoners in wartime. Although we generally don't redeem a captive more than their value, it could be that during war you don't submit to any of the enemy's demands, and these halachas don't apply. Two very quick sources for that. First of all is Erevin Menhei, if you want to look this up. Alternatively, we have the Potik in Bamidbar, Kaf Aleph, the first Potik, that when the king of Arad, who lived in the Negev, heard that the Jews were coming, he took captives. Rashi says he only took Shifa Achas. He took one captive. And they went out with full military artillery to try and get in the back. Similarly for the book of Shmuel, chapter 11, with the story of King David, when he, David the Melech, when he, the Amalekim attacked the town of Ziklag, and they took the woman captive. They didn't sit down on a negotiating table. They went out to war to save the prisoners. So it could be that at times of war, none of this applies. Suffice it to say, our prayer is that all the Gilad Shalit and all our brethren who are captured by the Yimach Shemam, these Arabs, should be returned home safely, together with their families. Bimheira b'yameinu.